The RTE Rugby Podcast.
And you're very welcome to the RTE Rugby Podcast. My name is Hugh Cahill. Beside me is Wes Liddy, RTE Rugby Editor. And we're here to look ahead to the weekend that is in the RBS Six Nations Week 2 of international games. In a few minutes, we're going to speak to former Ireland international Dave Corkery. We're also going to hear from Sky Italia presenter Moreno Mala to get the inside scoop on how the Italians feel ahead of this one. Conor O'Shea obviously heavily involved as well. Joe Schmidt and Simon Zeebo, as well as the reaction from Sergio Parise, all to come over the next 40 minutes or so. But Wes is with me, as I said. And look, there's been a lot of talk about the opening weekend from an Irish point of view, and we can understand why. It wasn't the result that we expected. It wasn't the result that we predicted last week. And a lot of unease about not only how Scotland beat us, but the Irish performance overall, I think.
Yeah, I suppose talking to some people since, hard to find the right word, but I suppose uncharacteristic is maybe a bit light, but it's probably the first time, I think, in Joe's reign that I can remember that, I mean, we've obviously lost games, but there were games maybe we were expected to lose, or maybe even ones like Argentina in the World Cup, where there were slightly mitigating circumstances with a lot of people missing. But, you know, we arrived up to this one in good nick.
Oh, we were 15 minutes late, Wes. We were 15 minutes late getting there. We weren't in good nick.
That was an unfortunate choice of words. We all know a late bus can really derail things in a major way. Yeah, it's the first time I ever remember us just under Joe, kind of probably the biggest underperformance we've had in the last 3-4 years, I'd say.
Yeah, and, you know, going through the match as well, I think it was obvious pretty early on, within 15 minutes of the game, that something wasn't quite right.
Yeah.
Everything that Ireland were trying was getting knocked back. Scotland seemed to be able to read everything that we managed in attack. And we had over 60% possession in that first half at certain periods and could do nothing with the ball. And the longer that went on, the more I kept expecting Ireland to change things up, but they didn't.
Yeah, well, they don't, I suppose, really. The stats, I mean, it's been well worn since, but they're incredible. If you looked at them and you knew nothing about the game, you'd think Ireland won by 30 points. You know, Scotland had 32 missed tackles. Ireland made 495 metres. I think Scotland made less than 200. Just possession and territory, like you said. Incredible stuff, really. So, I mean, it was a case of, you look at the Mall in the first half where they were blown up for instruction when they were over the line. You look at Jamie Heaslip maybe forcing the offload. A couple of chances like that, coupled with a couple of, more than a couple of just catastrophic defensive mistakes. You know, that's a 30-point swing in some ways. I'm not saying we deserve to win, but it was an eminently winnable game, even as bad as we played.
It's incredibly frustrating, those statistics, I find, watching Ireland play rugby, because it's like this box-ticking exercise. They had more metres carried. They had X amount of possession. They had, you know, a certain percentage of territory. But they just don't do enough of the ball, with the ball, for me. And Scotland had three chances in the first half, and they took all three of them. And we're there with all these wonderful statistics to our name. As you said, if you're reading them just without having seen the game, you think Ireland have won. But there has to be more to rugby than that. You got to play the game with your heads up as well, not just ticking boxes. And we struggled for large parts to actually find space and use the ball.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's been a good few years generally, but two championships, beating the All Blacks, whatever. But when things have gone badly, it's inevitably been these couple of things we've come back to: being predictable in attack, possibly being unable to find a plan B or C, or God forbid, no plan at all, and just play the game, and getting caught in our own defence. And look, they know what they're at. They're clever guys. It's just baffling how certain aspects of it don't get fixed, or get fixed and then revert to type again down the line.
Well, reports that the Italians have banned cars from the streets of Rome for the era that Ireland are going to be travelling from their team hotel to get to the stadium in time this weekend. So hopefully the bus won't be an excuse.
But if you arrive 8 minutes late and play that much worse, I wonder if you get there 8 minutes early, do you improve by 20 or 30 points?
Okay, well, the Irish team was named by Joe Schmidt at Carton House today on Thursday. Ian Henderson drops out of the match day 23 after suffering a hamstring strain in training on Tuesday. Donnacha Ryan starts in the second row. Cian Healy will start his first RBS Six Nations game since Ireland beat Scotland to win the championship back in 2015. Jack McGrath drops to the bench. Joe Schmidt has been chatting to Damien O'Mara about the team. Initially, his decision to rotate his props.
I think it was preconceived that we were going to make a few changes potentially this week, and some of them didn't happen because guys aren't quite fit. You know, guys like Pete O'Mahony, Johnny Sexton, Andrew Trimble aren't quite there yet, and at the same time Ian Henderson picked up a little bit of a hamstring strain. It is nothing serious, but it'll keep him out of this week's fixture, and as a result there's a couple of changes, and also the change in the front row. Both Ken and Jack have trained really well, and either way they get a fair bit of the game. You know, it tends to go 50-30 if one starts, and so, you know, between them in the first two matches they'll have played 80 minutes.
Is there a sense at all of maybe owing it to the players, or giving the players from last weekend an opportunity to correct things, to right the wrongs of the result and the way things didn't necessarily go according to plan in Murrayfield?
Yeah, and I think it's also a reflection of the confidence we have in the players. I think the players are really disappointed. But as they demonstrated in the second half, in that third quarter, you know, the players really demonstrated that they are utterly capable. They turned around a 21-5 deficit early in the game to 21-8 at halftime, and then 22-21 with 10, 12 minutes to go, plus created a number of good field positions and good opportunities. And the biggest disappointment for us probably is that, having done the hard work to get back into the game, we didn't finish it off.
So then in terms of preparation this week, is it as much psychological as anything else in terms of focusing on that, focusing on the fact that, okay, we had a disastrous start, we didn't give ourselves a fair account of our potential in the first half, but there's plenty of positives there and you don't become a bad team overnight?
Yeah, a little bit like that. I think, you know, it's also physical in that we want to get a bit of a feel-good factor by working hard and feeling that, you know, we've prepared ourselves. And so I think, you know, from that perspective, I think the players feel like they've put some work in this week. And I think that's both mentally and physically, to make sure that they go out with a really positive attitude. I think one of the dangers in a result like that is that you become fully focused on the negatives. There have to be some positives when you build your way back into a game like that. And there were six tries in the game. It was three each. There were a lot of things that were evenly shared, and certainly a lot of things that suggested we had more of the game, and I think we didn't make the most of having more of the game, which is frustrating.
But we're in a situation now where, okay, it's a blank page for Saturday, but have we left ourselves in a position where there's virtually no room for error between now and the last round of games against England at the Aviva?
Exactly. There is no room for error. I think we've got to get, you know, we've got to win every game. We go out with that ambition every week anyway, and so the ambition for this week is that we want to fully focus on Italy, and the other matches will look after themselves in time. But I think we can't look past Italy. They led for a long time against Wales. They led through the first half, and they also demonstrated a real resilience in defence. The first 20 minutes, Wales utterly dominated, had field position, had platforms to launch from, and really put Italy under pressure, and Italy held fast.
So patience could be as important as anything else this weekend?
Yeah, and I think the danger is that you don't get the balance, that you're so wound up about making up for missed opportunities last week that you try to create a whole lot of them and start overextending yourself or over chasing things, and sometimes you know, I think you can make things difficult for yourself doing that, particularly against a defence that we know are going to come hard at us.
Yeah, that's Joel Schmidt speaking to Damien O'Mara just a little bit earlier on today. Dave Corkery is on the line. Dave, you're very welcome.
Cheers, you.
All right, let's start with last weekend then. Like, your overall thoughts on the match and the Irish performance. What did you think, Dave?
First of all, I think there's too much talk, Hugh, about Ireland and the negatives that they brought to the game. I think Ireland didn't lose that game. I thought Scotland won it. I thought they were magnificent from the start. Their attitude was right. And if I hear any more about this bus that is late, it's gonna drive me crazy. I mean, Joe alluded to it after the game that, look, that wasn't the reason why they lost the game. And it kind of baffles me as to why he keeps on bringing it up.
He brought it up again today.
He did, yeah. Yeah, I know that. Yeah, he brought it up. And, like, you know, things like that, you know, you say it once, you leave it. If it's not an issue in your mind, then it shouldn't be brought up again and you move on. But he keeps on bringing it up. So that's me. It's a small bit looking for excuses. And as I say, I thought Scotland won that game. They were magnificent. Their defence was absolutely incredible. You know, they didn't wait for something to happen. They went out and they made it happen. They turned their defence into attack. And they, you know, they really... they did their homework. They saw where Ireland were quite poor over the last couple of years, which is in the out, which is in the wider channels, and that's where they hit them. They hit them hard out there. So they, any turnover balls, it was two passes away from the breakdown. They hit them wide, and that's where Ireland were weak. So again, as I say, look, you know, you've eight Glasgow players in that Scottish side who are, you know, playing with a huge amount of confidence. And if you were to ask me a dark horse for the championship, for the European Championship, I would put Glasgow there. I think they're a very, very good side and underestimated.
So, I mean, everything that Ireland tried in that first half particularly, Dave, they were knocked back in, and it was as if Scotland expected everything that Ireland threw at them. Yeah, and are Ireland too predictable?
I'll tell you why, Hugh, exactly. I mean, when you pick a back row of three number eights, you know exactly what they're going to do. Mm. Number eights are designed to carry ball and carry it hard. I mean, these three guys have built their careers around carrying ball over the gain line and rarely passing it. So when you put a double hitter on those guys, knowing exactly what's going to happen, it's quite easy to stop. And all you need is a couple of lunatics in the Scottish side who are prepared to put their body on the line. That's exactly what they did. I mean, you saw the emotion in their faces. And for a side not to have won their first game in the Six Nations Championship for 11 years, that meant something to them, and it was hurting. And you could see that's the pride and passion they brought it. And the damage obviously was all done in the first half. And I suppose the two real disappointing things for me were the, how long it took Ireland to wake up. You know, you can give this excuse about the bus, you can give excuse about the weather, but they're professional players. Mm. You know, a rugby ball isn't round, it doesn't bounce right. You have to be able to cater for certain circumstances that come up. And they just didn't. They didn't react. They didn't have a plan B. They were too systematic. And that's probably, if I was to have a negative side to Joe Smith, that would be he's too systematic in the way he plays the game.
Okay, well, let's develop this point a bit more then, right? Because it did seem like Ireland were incapable of reacting to what was going on in front of them. And, you know, sitting beside a former international myself watching the game in Twickenham last weekend, they're saying, why aren't they doing this? Why aren't they changing X, Y and Z? Like, it seems like whatever team goes out on that pitch is regimented in a certain pattern of play, and they are not allowed to deviate from the instructions.
Yeah, it, I would almost describe it, Hugh, like it's playing rugby by numbers.
Yeah.
So they go through, I mean, the amount of analysis and work Joe Smith does off the field is absolutely incredible. Like, his mind is 110% rugby. Mm. He's a fantastic analysis of the game. He's got people, you know, watching video sessions day in, day out, looking at stats. So he has a certain play for almost every square inch of the field. So you do this here, you do that there. Almost to the point where as if Simon Zeber got the ball behind his own goal line and ran the length of the field and scored the most amazing try ever, he would probably give out to him. Because that was not the right thing to do.
But
in that
sport doesn't work like that, Dave. You know more than anybody else. Games don't work like that.
Absolutely. And when you come up against a Scottish side who were just hell-bent on winning that game, you know, it's... That's when Joe Smith falls down, and I think that is something that he's going to have to change. He's going to have to give the guys a bit more freedom to be able to read what's in front of him. And look, we've all heard the saying, playing heads-up rugby time and time and time again. And look, the professional game has, I suppose, made professional coaches go this way because they're so afraid of actually losing because their jobs are depending on it, their revenue is depending on it. And players then are afraid to step outside the box of structure.
Well, see, like Wes, one of the reasons why New Zealand are the best team in the world is that they are coached so well in the basic skills of the game, but they're also given the freedom to play whatever's in front of them. And, you know, Ireland are so restricted in what they can do out there that it's no surprise that if things go wrong against them that they just don't shift the focus of attack or the focus of defence.
Yeah, I suppose, look, it's been successful relatively. Well, it's been successful. But yeah, I suppose if you want the team to go to that ultimate place that is maybe the goal down the line, you know, getting into that last four of a World Cup or further, yeah, that's probably the last thing that has to come is that ability to maybe tear it up a bit and
but maybe and they'll never be given that freedom, though.
Yeah, and well, I mean, I suppose they played such attacking rugby with Leinster when Joe was there that the first year he came in, it was quite one-out runners and predictable, and we kind of thought they were going to evolve over time. But I suppose, you know, for the most part, that evolution hasn't really happened. And, I mean, it's a bit churlish to criticise. Sometimes we're still in the hunt for a championship. But, yeah, I suppose you'd prefer to see them, You know, you'd love to see Zeebo given a bit more licence. You'd love to see maybe when he comes back from injury, Jarrod Payne, a full back, maybe what he can bring from there and develop in that attacking side of their game.
So clearly Joe Schmidt, Dave, feels that, you know, the Irish players are going to play, he wants to play them to their strengths, and their strengths is the system that he has in place. Is that fair to say?
I wouldn't think so, Hugh. I don't think we're playing to our strengths. I think we're playing to Joe Schmidt's strength. That's what he wants to do. That's the way he coaches. That's exactly what he wants. And look, when it works, it's absolutely sublime. It's fantastic. You know, when you've got Heaslip and Stander and these big ball carriers, Sean O'Brien getting over the gain line and giving Conor Murray a ball on a plate, it's fantastic because it works. But when it doesn't work, is when it goes, excuse my French, tits up.
Yeah.
And we don't have a plan B in place. And that's where you need to give Conor Murray, Sexton or Jackson, whoever it is in those key positions, a bit of a license to play what's in front of him. So the thing is, at the moment, they're calling something. They have a call from a line-out and they have a couple of calls after that, the next couple of phases. And even if it isn't on, they're still going ahead with it. And that's the problem. You've got to be able to react to certain situations that arise. And look, international rugby is another step up from the Champions Cup or the Guinness Pro League, and it's milliseconds.
I think a prime example of that, Wes, was the Dunbar try from the line-out. I've watched it five or six times now, and Dunbar slips in. You see Tadhg Furlong, Rory Best, none of them react to this because they are expecting Scotland to go to the back. They don't deviate from what they're expecting, and the result is that Scotland get the easiest try as the international rugby.
Well, Bernard Jackman showed on Monday night on Against the Head a piece from last year where they set up the exact same way. Scotland didn't end up throwing to the front of the line out. They ignored it, but they obviously, Nathan Hines, especially in the backroom team, looked at it and said, well, they didn't cop this last year. Did the same thing again. I mean, you'd imagine, one, a centre comes into the line out, maybe the alarm bells start to go off a little bit. And two, Tadhg Furlong wasn't even lifting Jamie Heaslip. Jamie Heaslip was lifting the man behind him. So Tadhg Furlong didn't even really have need to be faced either way.
Yeah,
but I think we're kind of, I suppose we're forgetting the point again, what I said in terms of, like, Scotland won that game. They were cleverer, they were more hungry at the breakdown. You know, they were prepared to take risks. And at that level, you know, you take risks. You look at when New Zealand won the World Cup against France, it was a similar type of line-out, an unusual line-out that caught France on the hop. And you need to be able to take risks like that. And that's where Ireland, I think, are, Dave, letting themselves down.
If you're coaching at any level, Dave, and it's one of your own teams, you know, and the average age of the guy in the team ranges from 20 to 35. They're grown men, in other words. They've been playing the game all their lives. I've heard a lot of people explain what happened with the Irish defence, but I haven't heard anyone explain why. How does no one of seven or eight people stood on a blind side looking directly at one opposition player opposite him? How do none of them have the gumption to go, I need to be somewhere else? How does that happen?
That's a good question. They're drilled. They're drilled into that. They're told where to go. And this is going back again to the point that Joe is a very systematic type of coach. You know, they're not there just by choice or by chance. They're there because they were told to be there. And that's the thing. And they're not playing heads up. They're not looking what's in front of them. They're not looking at the gaps. They're not looking at the defensive structures. They're not looking at the attacking structures that's coming at them. And that's, as I say, look, that's my one criticism of Joe Smith, and it has been for a couple of years now, is that he's too systematic. And as it, when things go wrong, they tend to go wrong drastically. But look, again, you know, I have to take my hat off to Scotland.
Okay.
It was Vern Cotter's last game against Ireland. He's moving on next year. And look, you could really, really see that it meant something to him and it meant something to the players. And there was a particular shot at the end of the game when the camera panned on to an area of the crowd, of the audience, and there was a Scottish man crying. And it said a lot. And, like, you could see some of the Scottish players before the game again, there was tears in their eyes, and it just meant so much. And I just felt that some of the Irish guys were probably just waiting for things to happen, waiting for what had happened the last couple of months to just continue. And if you don't mind, if I just go back to those games against the Southern Hemisphere teams, like, we must remember that we're in year one of a 4-year cycle that will bring us up to our World Cup.
Yeah.
I can tell you now that New Zealand, Australia and South Africa couldn't care less what friendly games they lose in this period of their evolution in terms of getting to a World Cup. You know, in 4 years' time, if Ireland can go and beat those three teams again, I'll be mightily impressed. So
yeah,
I think that's a fair point.
I think it's a fair point because I think everyone has gone on about the All Blacks result in Chicago and beating Australia. I think you have to put it into perspective. Go back to the World Cup, go back to last year's Six Nations Championship. How good is this Ireland team? We've yet to actually definitively answer that in competition when it matters. We're going to move on to this weekend because we have Italy to look forward to. Before I get your thoughts on it, Dave, have a listen to what Simon Szebo had to say at Carlton House earlier today.
Yeah, it's frustrating, but, you know, it's training is totally different to match intensity. And, you know, every team in the Six Nations this year is quality, and I don't think there's any team that's going to run away with it. So we have a lot to still to play for, but we need to make sure that we bring what we're doing in training onto the pitch and make sure we execute right, because we're more than capable.
And no doubt, you know, Italy are obviously going to target their home games this season in order to try and get a scalp somewhere along the way. So you know that they've lost one already, they're going to come gunning for Ireland this weekend.
Yeah, definitely. They're a quality side. They've got quality players in their side. It didn't go the way they wanted last week, but we know we're in for a backlash, especially with them playing at home. But you know, as long as we focus on ourselves and make sure we right our wrongs from last week, then hopefully we should be in a good place.
What are the main areas that we should expect this Irish team to really focus on this weekend? Where are the main areas of improvement? Does it all start from the head and getting the mind right, and everything else will follow compared to where things went wrong last weekend?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's just focusing on us and making sure we turn up from the first minute, and if we're accurate in executing what we want, then I'm sure we should be able to put ourselves in a good place.
Just a final question. Obviously, I don't know the extent to which you watch the matches from last weekend across the board or dip into them, but it is as wide open a championship as we would have envisaged. And, you know, the upshot of that is, I suppose, there's no margin for error from an Irish perspective between here and that game against England on Paddy's weekend.
Yeah, a lot of people seem to be looking towards that, but like, it really is next game. And, you know, we can see people were talking about England and Wales and all these big games, but every single game is a big game, and the Scottish game was the biggest game for us, and we've unfortunately lost that. So now it's next game for us as Italy, and if we do our job right here, then hopefully we should be back in the tournament.
Okay, there's no hopefully about it, Dave. Ireland are going to win this game, right?
Absolutely. I mean, if they don't, we've got to be asking serious questions. I mean, Italy are not a good side. I mean, they're depending on literally strapping up Sergio Parisio to lead them on the field. I mean, the guy is too old. He's been a magnificent servant for the game, but he's there really as a spiritual leader at this stage. I mean,
he's still their best player though, isn't he?
He is, which tells a lot as to where Italy are. I mean, look, I know Italy beat South Africa during the during the November series again, and look, that'll tell you where South Africa are in terms of their progress. But you've got two teams who are playing really, really poor rugby in the Guinness Pro League, Benetton, Treviso and Zebra. And the majority, I think, nearly, I'd say 5/6 of their team actually come from those teams. So it really speaks about quality. They don't have the depth. They won't have a bench to bring on. They'll come out. They'll be crying. They'll be holding their crest. They'll be singing like never before at the national anthem. They'll give it everything, socks for the first 20 minutes. They'll hit anything. But after that, they'll break down. Okay. And as soon as one or two injuries come on board and the legs start to give out, Ireland might bring on a few subs. And if they don't get the bonus point tomorrow, they'll never get the bonus point.
Yeah, well, let's bring in Moreno Mala, who's a presenter with Sky Italia on the line. Moreno, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you. I'm just wondering what the mood in Italy is like after the opening weekend against Wales. I mean, you were right in there for certainly the first 40 minutes, had a lead into half time, and then it just seemed to go wrong in the second half.
We are all disappointed, the players, the fans, I think the coach as well, because in the first 40 minutes, I think we were perfect because we created really troubles for Wales. They were having troubles in moving the ball and playing their own game. The problem is that we had difficulties in scoring. We just managed to score 7 points, and you cannot think of winning a match by just scoring 7 points. But we were perfect. Then we were a little bit too indisciplined, and that costed us the match, because once the Wales went 2 points up, they understood they could have won the match, and so doors opened for them. It's not just a case of being good for the whole 80 minutes from the physical point of view, because we did it, but we are matching up against 5 teams that are stronger than us. And so our match is just to create troubles the longer we can to all these teams. And every single team is different. I mean, Ireland is different from Wales, even if you are without Johnny Sexton and you have lost against a very good Scottish side. We're going to have problems, but we cannot change our game plan at the moment. Otherwise, we're going to play a rugby match that is not in our court at the moment.
So, I mean, Sergio Parisse, we mentioned there, I think he's going to win his 123rd cap. He's 33 years of age. He is still such a talisman for Italy. You would shudder to think what would happen to Italy if Sergio Parisse wasn't available. He was that much of an impact as well against Wales last weekend.
Sergio Parisse is like our Linus Shelter. When we were without him against Tonga, we lost, for example. Sergio Parisse is so important for us. I think he only has one problem, but sometimes it's a big problem, and is the way he deals with referees. That's the only thing he's missing at the moment. And in the right time, in the second half, in the beginning of the second half, we were having problems with the referee, and he got penalized twice, and those two penalties costed us actually the match. But he's a far superior player to all the others in the pitch. And that's sometimes a problem. Also, I think when he plays for Stade Français, he knows that maybe he's stronger than that team, but that's it.
Yeah.
But he's a world-class player. We just can't rely on him.
Conor O'Shea mentioned the referee last weekend, and he didn't want to be critical, but the penalty count speaks for itself, 16-5 against Italy. So, I mean, that's a pretty phenomenal outweigh in terms of the disciplinary record during the match. Conor O'Shea has drawn attention to it. The forwards coach, Giampiero Di Carli, also said during the week that there were several instances where Wales weren't penalised, where Italy were. Do you feel that Italy are not getting the right rub of the stick in terms of referees' treatment?
I think there are different kinds of penalties. There are penalties that you give away in a silly way. There are penalties that you are forced to commit from the opponent because they are lifting the tempo, and there are penalties you give away because you are tired. I think against Wales, yes, we were penalized, but basically I think there were not so many big mistakes by the referee, and I think also referees gave us a help, probably because in the first half we weren't penalized for being offside close to the rucks two or three times when Wales were trying to lift their tempo. So I don't think the referees are a problem. Obviously, we are Italy, and we know that sometimes a 50-50 call is not going our way. Mm. But we cannot talk about that, because in scrum, yeah, in the first half we were dominating, and in the second half we were not so good. But the problem is that the two props for Wales that came in changed that match, and we didn't match up the same way. So I won't talk too much about the referee, honestly.
David, how do you expect Ireland to approach this game? Like, he's kept with the three number eights, if you like, Stander, yeah, O'Brien and Hislop. Van der Flyer, there was a case to bring him in a couple of articles during the week, but he's still on the bench. So you could argue we just still don't have that out-and-out number seven. How do you expect Ireland to approach this one?
Yeah, I think there's going to be very little change, Hugh. I think because Italy won't be as strong as Scotland, I think Ireland will play really, really well. They'll constantly get over the gain line, apart from maybe the first 10, 15 minutes of the game, which will be up for grabs. But as soon as they get, as soon as Italy get tired, the discipline will probably go again, because they'll get frustrated. They're playing at home, and look, if they target any games to win in the Six Nations, it's always at home. Like, they played really, really well for the first 40 minutes, but again, I'd say the legs gave out. They didn't have the firepower to bring off the bench that Wales had, or the experience. So I don't think anything will change. I think Joe will go back to his systematic ways, but against a lesser team with lesser quality, I think it'll work really, really well. And as I said, look, I mean, they have to target the bonus point now. And the bonus point system is fantastic in the game. It's brilliant to bring it in. It makes it exciting. Mm. It keeps teams fighting to stay within seven, and it keeps teams fighting to go for the extra try when they have three on the board. So I don't think it's going to be much change. I think it is. I am disappointed with the back row selection, I'll be honest with you. I thought...
Who was your drop?
Hard one. Jamie Hislop, I thought, has been magnificent for the last 2 years of his career. I think he's played his best rugby over the last 2 years. He's matured sublimely. So for me, it would have been Hislop. Van der Flyer would have been in. I think what you need, you have to have an out and out seven. You have to have a dog who's prepared to put his head where you wouldn't put a brick. Especially at the breakdown, we didn't have one against Scotland, so we had too many guys just waiting out to get the ball to take it up again, and we didn't have someone like Peter Romani's ability. Like, Peter Romani's a Rottweiler, that's the best way to describe him in the game. You know, he's there, he's at the breakdown, he's fighting, he's putting huge pressure on the nine to get rid of the ball, and that's the last thing a nine wants, is somebody putting pressure on him. So I don't think there's going to be much change. Delighted Paddy Jackson is there again. I thought he played really, really well last week for Ireland. Certainly didn't deserve to be dropped, even if Johnny Sexton was back.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't think there's any. No, I'm telling you, that's.
Come on, Dave.
No.
No way. I'm not having that.
Why do you drop a guy for playing well?
Well, I thought he was very deep last weekend. And I thought, you know, actually, if Johnny Sexton was on the pitch, taking the ball on that game line might have given Ireland a better chance to get in behind the Scottish Blitz defence. I just thought Jackson sat a little bit off the pace. No?
Look, I'm not saying Johnny Sexton is a lesser player than Jackson, but I don't think Jackson deserved to be dropped. That's what I'm alluding to. So,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Well, look, speaking about halves, Moreno, I just want to ask you about Carlo Canna. He's, some would say, a fullback naturally by trade, but he's playing it out half tomorrow. Eduardo Gori is in at scrum half. Is he the answer to Italy's long-standing issue at number 10? Is Carlo Canna the future?
First thing, I would like to have your same problem at number 10 with Sexton and Paddy Jackson. Yeah. Secondly, we are talking about the new Diego Dominguez since he retired. Carlo Canna is a very skillful player, a lot of skills. He's a very attacking player. Sometimes he cannot be compelled to play a particular kind of rugby, maybe a too tactical one. But at the moment, he's our first choice. He has a good boot. He has a good way to kick, play penalties and so on. At the moment, he's our possibility. Tommaso Allan is slightly different, but probably at the moment, Conor O'Shea decided to give Carlo Canna the number 10 jersey. We know that in defence we have to adapt and to move it a little bit wider, to shift it not to the wing but maybe a little bit away from the breakdown area, otherwise it's going to be targeted. But I think it is our number 10 at the moment and we have to move on with him.
Okay, yeah, that's a fair call. How do you think it will go this weekend? We're expecting a big crowd as well. There always is when Ireland go to Rome, so you know, hopefully the atmosphere is brilliant. But how do you think this game will go?
First of all, we have to say that initially we were not satisfied with the crowd last match. Just 40,000 people in the stadium was the lowest point for our rugby in during the Six Nations while being at the Olimpico. There were problems because on Sunday and then we played on Saturday again. So sometimes people had to choose between the two matches. So I think we're going to expect a bigger crowd. Ireland is going to bring a lot of supporters. So the atmosphere is going to be much more electric, I think. But it doesn't go down to the supporters. That's the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, enjoy the match. Thanks so much for being with us, Moreno. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how things turn out. But thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Okay. Listen, we don't have much time left. So, Dave, just while I have you, I was in Twickenham for the England-France game last weekend. I thought France played really, really well. I think something like 10 line breaks and they can only manage one try.
Yeah.
If they manage to put that kind of finishing touch, they could be a real threat for anybody in this competition.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest problem in France, I think everybody knows at this stage, is the club structure isn't working for them. They don't have control of the players. So I think there's a new president coming in next year. He's going to take control of that and I think they'll become a super team. Everybody misses French rugby at the moment. Everybody misses the way it's been played, been historically played over the last couple of years, and they seem to be given that a bit of a license now to have a cut.
Yeah.
They have the quality of players to do it. They probably just need a bit more, I suppose, collective agreement in the way they're going to play the game. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're going to be a very, very tough prospect, especially for Ireland.
Okay.
I think they're going to really, really test Ireland.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that goes. I kind of fancy Wales to beat England this weekend, but I don't know. We'll wait and see what happens. Yeah, Dave doesn't think so.
No.
What do you know?
I don't think so. I think England under Eddie Jones are going in the right direction.
Okay.
They have a fantastic squad. They got guys coming back from injury. I just think they'd lead that a little bit too strong.
All right. Wes, the 20s got away with it maybe last weekend. Scotland played very well, actually. The women, too, as well, were pretty awful for most of the parts. I think they'd be the first to admit that, but they did get away with it. Expecting improvements this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're all looking at wins this week and pretty comfortably, hopefully. The 20s, I think the talk is that they have a very good backline and they maybe didn't get to show that last week.
No.
But it's kind of size and a little bit of experience up front. So the test for them are, you would think, going to come Wales, France, England, much bigger packs. And we'll see how they fare then.
Yeah, women's international Sophie Spence is back. She's on the bench. The return to play protocol. She has been playing with Belvedere and wasn't in the team last week, which was a bit of a surprise, but she is back in the squad and on the bench for the Ireland women's team. They play on Sunday. It's live on RT2 television, as is the Ireland versus Italy game on Saturday afternoon from Rome. My thanks to Dave on radio as well. Yeah, Dave was just reminding me. My thanks to Dave Corky. Dave, enjoy the match this weekend.
Thank you, lads.
Appreciate
Cheers.
It. And thanks to Wes as well. Damien O'Mara produced, and we are back with the RT Rugby podcast at the same time next week. Enjoy the Six Nations weekend. We're hoping that Ireland get off the mark with a win.
The RTE Rugby Podcast.